Hello, everyone. I'm Alex Majorana.
And I'm Sydney Lynch.
And this is Little Known Tracks. This week, we talk to New York-based indie band Gamblers. While their interests differ between winemaking, pro wrestling, and film, the whole band can agree Jimmy has cool shirts. The band pulls inspiration from 80s commercial vibes, the indie rock zeitgeist, and the full encapsulation of Phil Collins.
Their new record, Pulverizer, was developed with a new writing process by showing up and waiting for the universe to provide. After a successful release show, they're hoping to get some more shows booked this summer. Without further ado, Pulverizer by Gamblers.
Gamblers, we've got the whole band on with us today. Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having us.
So I think we wanted to start with that. Is there anything that you guys are particularly interested in outside of music? Do you have any passions? Do you just kind of like doing anything? What are some of those things that you just do during your everyday life that you guys enjoy?
I'm on a Vegas movie kick. I watch a lot of movies, and they tend to slip into themes. And ever since I booked my Vegas trip, which is coming up this weekend, I already plugged it, I've been watching like every Vegas movie. So, what's it called? Fear and Loathing, grade A. At the bottom of the list is like, ooh, we watched Vegas Vacation. And, you know, I wanted it to be funny, but I had a really hard time with it. Oh, actually, Leprechaun 3 is at the bottom of that list. It was fun in its own way, but I'm kind of a movie dork outside of music.
I feel like that's the best way to prepare a trip is just to completely immerse yourself in the, like, almost the culture of that trip. Movies, you know, music, yeah. Whatever you can, because it really gets you hyped up.
Yeah, I'm going to pull a full Ocean's 11 out there, so look my name in the news.
Hell yeah.
I'd say we'll keep an eye out for you on the news, but hopefully we won't have to do that.
I mean, the headline would be like, great new millionaire Jimmy, hits the scene. That would be...
Buys his building birthday. In. Buys a lot of cool shirts while in Vegas.
Yeah. No, I plan to. Outside of music, movie stuff. And right now it's Vegas movie stuff. Ocean's 11 was fun, of course. I watched the old one, the original, from like this late 60s or something. And it's boring, unfortunately. You get to see old Vegas a little. It's also one of the only movies where it's the old Rat Pack, you know, that's the cast. And it's every single scene, somebody is walking to a cabinet, opening it, and fixing a drink. They're just drinking the entire movie, and it's like really kind of impressive.
I was going to say either that or like smoking during that time.
Well, that's just a given.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't film anything without a cloud in front of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So outside of watching movies, do you have any interest in like the production end and like writing or anything of that nature? Or is it mostly just consuming and enjoying the craft of a movie?
Oh, you know, I kind of fell in love with movies on another level when I had to. I was training to do like web and graphic design for a little while. And I took a few film editing courses, which include like an introductory, like, you know, movies, look at movies and what we've achieved. And, you know, they run you through, instead of assigning a classic every week, it was like running you through 10 minutes of every classic film and talking about why it's great. Probably just to like prep you for like conversations at parties more than anything. But then I was like looking at just different things like, oh, I learned how to edit. And I got involved in music video editing for a little while and short film editing. And watching a movie, having done something like that on a small scale, yeah, you get to kind of have that extra level going of like, oh, what were they going for? How did they achieve this? So it started like a second layer of watching movies for me. There's the narrative, and then there's the narrative of how the film got made. So yeah, I'm obsessed with all that stuff, yeah.
Love it. And now, John and Michael, I see Yankees and I see a Mets hat. Is that like a big rivalry that goes on between you guys?
Yeah, huge.
Wow.
Since we've known each other pretty much.
Is that outside of music? You guys are big baseball fans?
Yeah, we actually almost got into a fight once because we were both hammered and we were on a roof somewhere in Brooklyn. And I won't say what he actually said, but he said something against Derek Jeter, and I think we kind of almost swung at each other or something, as young men tend to do from time to time. I've had like an on again, off again love affair with professional wrestling, and right now it's very much on again, and I'm into the whole like history of it, and it's like really fascinating because it started out not being predetermined. And then it morphed into the more theatrical version of what it is now. There was a really good, speaking of movies, movie last year called The Iron Claw, which deals with the Von Erich family, which were big promoters in Texas. But before it became centralized, it was all going off of territories, and the Von Erichs were big in the Texas territory. And it's a really crazy story. Five out of six of the brothers were, you know, either took their own life or were killed. It's a really just wild story, and Zac Efron, he should have been nominated for an Oscar for that.
I was saying that since I saw it.
Yeah, but you knew it wasn't going to happen because it was dealing with wrestling, and they just think that's lowbrow. It's like how horror is never really nominated for anything. But yeah, I definitely like things like along those lines. I mean, I'm interested in business too. I have a couple of companies that I run. So I think part of that leads into music as well, because just kind of putting things together and seeing how far you could push them is fun and rewarding, and not very cool to talk about, but you know, you did ask. So meaning, like, I think with music, especially in indie, it's like, it's very much like, it's cool to not seem like you care, or it's cool to seem like you don't care, rather. And you know, I don't subscribe to that, but anyway.
It's cool to care. Hey,
yeah, it's cool.
Anyone who says otherwise is wrong.
Well, thank you.
That's why we're here. Cause we care and we think it's cool.
Right. There you go. Okay.
I make wine. I'll show you. I'm running low here, but it's good.
I love that this is being recorded at the drum set.
Oh yeah, this is my office. Murder Studios. So yeah, I make wine. I like reading whaling books, autobiographies, Stephen King.
I would like to jump into the wine just for a second, because me and Alex are moving in a few months. And we were like, man, what are we going to do with this basement in the house that we're moving into? And our friend who we're moving in with was like, let's make wine. So the fact that you are currently doing that makes me feel a lot better that it is actually possible. So tell us how you got into that a little bit, and then we will definitely move into more of the music space. But I'm super interested.
Yeah, sure. I started it probably 5 or 6 years ago. My neighbor, who's also my landlord, got me into it. He was doing it out back, and I loved how it tasted. Not like bottled wine with a bunch of chemicals and sulfites and all that. I thought it was delicious, and I'm into booze. So I was like, can you show me how to do it? And he's like, totally. Yeah, I could use the help. He's like kind of older. So I do a lot of the legwork, yeah, that's how I got into it. It's mostly red. If you're getting into it, I would say start with like juice pails. Cause if you try to like jump into fresh grapes, it's a lot of equipment, a lot of time. And, you gotta be really sterile. That's like the name of the game.
Totally.
Yeah, it looks sterile down there.
Yeah, it's super sterile.
No, that's
next to all my woodworking old shit.
No, that's good advice for some beginners who have been thrown around the idea. So
yeah, definitely. Just go into like, if I don't know if there's, where are you guys located?
We're in Philly.
All right. So yeah, go into like a bunch of like floral places, like landscape type places. They do like seasonal grapes.
Okay.
Around the fall is like a really good time to jump into it. So right after the summer, it starts getting cooler, and that's when they start getting like the good stuff. So try to search up those places. I don't know if there's any like wine specialty stores that they'll definitely have it too, but, and just talk to like the old people. They
usually know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes
one guy will tell you one thing and the other guy's like, no, he's a fucking idiot, don't listen to him. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So you guys have your hobbies outside of music. Tell us a little bit about how you all met, got started playing music together in Gamblers.
So Johnny and I met in third grade, I think, which was 1997. We kind of just immediately hit it off with music and everything that we were interested in. And we've been, you know, pretty much best friends ever since that time. And we played in a number of bands together, you know, in high school and then later on. And we toured the country in a couple different bands, mostly one band that him and I were in, but, you know, in separate projects as well. And then I kind of went off and got really into production. I got really into hip hop. I made a couple of hip hop records, got into A&Ring and did a little bit of tour managing and just different things like that. And I kind of learned the business, the music business in the hip hop world. And at a certain point, I've always been very eclectic with my music tastes and the music that I create as well. So I started kind of, I was still playing in bands even when I was in doing the hip hop production stuff. And I was playing in this one band. And we went on a tour back in 2010, and the guitar player that I was playing drums, the guitar player of that band, this guy by the name of Gary, we kind of hit it off on that tour and throughout the rollout of that record. And we started a side project, and he was like, oh, we should take this side project, you know, more seriously, kind of how you're doing the hip hop stuff. And I recruited Johnny and recruited a couple other guys, and that actually became Gamblers. So Gamblers kind of started as a side project. And then fast forward, the original guy I started the band with left about 5 years ago, and we recruited Jimmy. And I always say too, we tried to get Jimmy in the band sooner, but he was busy. But then around 2019, he came and joined us, and the original sort of formation of the band kind of separated, and we kind of reformed the band with Johnny coming back and Jimmy coming in and myself and this production team from Long Island. They're now based in Florida, called the Brothers Nylon, that we worked on the new music with this record. And we created a really cool environment, just kind of going to the studio, throwing ideas around. And that's kind of how we ended up where we are now. And then, you know, we put out a record before this one. But yeah, I think that about probably covers it.
Jimmy, what were you busy with?
I was actually hosting a podcast about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and Mike was a guest on that, promoting that record. It was episode 3 of season 1. It's the one where Will creates an alternate ego. Alter ego character, what's his name, Kip Smithers, who's like kind of Carlton vibes. And so Mike came to my house and we watched that, and I made him French fries.
I don't remember that. Did you make
was the question? Yeah, well, because I usually made wings, but I heard that you were vegan, so I used my deep fryer and made you some fries.
That was very thoughtful, even though, yeah, I don't remember it.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad I got to remind you.
That is so funny. I'm caught up on what was the podcast? I assume you're not still doing it, but like, are you?
No. No, I'm not anymore.
He's
no.
Not kidding, though. You really did have a Fresh Prince podcast.
It lasted
That's a
about,
true story.
It was about 10 episodes, I think, stretched out probably over a year. And then, you know, I prioritized other things in my life.
And you joined the band.
Yeah.
So the podcast had to go.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
Only one audio medium at a time.
Yeah. Also, a fact of trivia fact about Mike's episode, I had a lot of the mics turned off for about half of it when we recorded it. And then I recreated some of the conversation, and I blamed it on our sound technician, but we didn't have one. It was just
you did this.
Yeah, but I made up a guy named Kevin, said Kevin, yeah, screwed it up.
Kevin fucked
that
up.
Was your alter ego.
Rip Kevin.
Yeah, rip Kevin.
Thematic. So I think one thing that is interesting about the new music and some of the new stuff that you've gotten out is you have a couple of music videos, and the one for Pulverizer is in a wrestling ring, and there's a lot going on there. So I think the interest in wrestling has shown through a little bit. And then was there a process making that? Because I think like making music videos is always an interesting process. Like where were your hands in the making of that music video, and kind of like what was the process of just making them?
Well, we love working with our close friend of ours, James Morano. He's involved in a lot of our video productions. And I guess Pulverizer in general was an idea that really Johnny was kicking around and kept bringing up to us, saying, I have this idea about sort of like a wrestler, like Pulverizer, like, get it? I was like, for some reason, it didn't click until he brought it up several times. And then we were like, oh, yeah, we should definitely do that. But even then, there was a lot of puzzle pieces to figure out, and that's the work of our good bud James Morano, and Mike's always reaching out to places, so we had to find wrestlers and a wrestling ring and all of this. So there's a process to that. You know, you mentioned we did a few videos recently. We have another coming up, tease, but we did shoot those two recent music videos back to back. Like Friday night was like wrestling ring, like shoot all day and night. And then the next day was our second video shoot for Running From My Grave. And that's just the nature of like scheduling a bunch of folks to be in the same place at the same time and like getting a, you know, getting cool, high, you know, quality stuff done with like low budget. It's like sometimes that means like figuring out the places and working around that. But yeah, he's a real collaborative, you know, member of our video team. And yeah, shouts out to James Morano.
So let's dive a little deeper into the album. So Pulverizer came out March 29th of this year. Tell us a little bit about the writing, recording process, and how the album came to be.
So yeah, kind of like the period of time I was describing when like the original lineup folded and then we started, I basically decided I was going to keep the band going in name and put out our first record and continue on making new music. So I ended up putting out the album during COVID in September of 2020. And I had basically this maniac driven focus of like, I'm not gonna stop until this happens and we get a deal and everything like that. And that kind of took me like 5-6 years to come to fruition, but it ultimately did pan out and we got a physical distribution deal for our first record, Small World, through this company called Amped, who they put out about 50% of all physical media. And we did a deal with Record Store Day. And so the record was in a bunch of shops and like 50 stores or something like that. And then we just went right back into the studio. And that's really what kicked off like Jimmy and I's creative relationship and working with the Brothers Nylon, the production team on Long Island. And we would kind of just show up at, you know, 10, 11 in the morning and work until 6, 7, 8 at night, you know, just kind of treated it like a regular job, you know, a couple days a week type of thing, sometimes more, sometimes less frequent. And we wrote, you know, in the studio like that. There are only two songs on the record that predate that period. The first song on the album called Sleep In and another song called Too Proud to Be Happy, but everything else was written in the room together, you know, Jimmy, myself, and the Brothers Nylon. And we just wrote and demoed for a good year and a half. And then we started making the final product with our friends Ray Marte, who's in a great band called Moontooth, and Anthony Lepardo, who own and operate a studio on Long Island called Westfall Recordings. And then that was another year and a half of, you know, tracking and mixing. And then we finally sent it off to mastering. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, very, very creative, but also very focused. And I think when you could kind of combine those two elements, you could really get some magic going. When you kind of treat it like a job or treat it like, hey, show up and go to work. And it's funny how creativity works like that, because, you know, you might not think that would be conducive to your creativity, but it's kind of like giving into the muse or getting, you know, go stand in front of the universe and see what happens. And well, I showed up, universe, what do you have for me today? Oh, nothing. Oh, the most brilliant thing I've ever heard. Oh, somewhere in between. Like, that's just how it goes. So you just got to show up. And that's what we did.
David Lynch talks about it like fishing for mm-hmm. a big idea or a good idea. And you show up and sometimes you catch nothing and sometimes you catch a big one.
Exactly.
But you got to be there.
I think one of the things that is impressive to me is the amount of different like instrumentation and sounds on this album. And there are three of you in this band. And obviously there was some external help, but I think there's a lot to be said about that with all of the different instrumentation that is on this. So how did you kind of come to that decision with like the horns and everything else that is kind of put on this to make it that way, right? Like, how did you get to the sounds that you created with Pulverizer?
So going back to what I had said earlier, which was like, as a music listener, like when I was involved in hip hop, I was still playing in bands. I've always had a very, very wide appetite for all types of music. And one of the frustrations or sort of, you know, things about the first version of this band Gamblers that I was always kind of butting heads up against was kind of, you know, some limitations with the other members of how they, you know, kind of saw the music being. So when everything fell apart, and for a time I was really the only member of Gamblers before I put the band back together, as scary as that was, it was also very liberating because now I knew that, you know, I could really treat, I always think of Gamblers like the American version of Gorillaz, where it's like, it could be anything. You know what I mean? It's, I don't think of that anymore because now we are truly a band again. But for a time I was like, oh, okay, well I could lead this and then I could kind of take it anywhere I want and it could be Gamblers. But then with Jimmy coming in, Jimmy and I are just more aligned musically. Johnny and I are always aligned musically. And then, you know, you throw into that, the guys that we were working with who are a big part of producing and writing alongside us, they're multi-instrumentalists. Well, one of them is really an engineer who was very, very critical and hands-on in the demoing process, extremely fast and just a great engineer. The other guy, they're two brothers. They're actually twins. The other guy, Nick, is a multi-instrumentalist and truly a multi-instrumentalist. So having a great engineer, you know, being more just open to different ideas, and then having this wonderful multi-instrumentalist to kind of just throw things at the wall. Hey, how about a horn part? How about a violin? How about, you know, a synth part? You know, we were able to kind of in real time just test all that out. And I think, you know, it made the music obviously a lot more diverse sounding. But it's totally in line with, you know, what I'm hearing in my head. You know, so hopefully it makes sense on the record, but
yeah. You know, having those multi-instrumentalists opened up just like possibilities, like, oh, suddenly we can do strings, horns, sax, synth, everything. And so that the, you know, the toys are all there for you to play with. And I think going into that, I was having a little bit of like, okay, well, where does this all coalesce and where does it join? And then I think, you know, halfway through this writing process, we started, the record is still very eclectic and each song kind of has its own feel, but like, at least for me, I started remembering like, oh yeah, commercial mid-80s music was like horn, synth, you know, everything that we had sort of been playing with. And some of these tunes started leaning into that direction. And I was like, okay, I can find, you know, a groove here of like, you know, where all these things, you know, fit together and add to something greater. And then we kind of started writing, you know, right into that. So yeah, great.
It's great to have a collaboration, a team to collaborate with, you know, that you guys did, that is so consistent, you know, of multi-instrumentalists, engineers, your ideas. Is that something that, you know, was the plan when you guys went into writing process of how you wanted the album to sound, or was it maybe a little bit more experimental when it came to the sound that you were going for?
It was very experimental in the sense that like we truly did not know what we were going to end up with. You know, we would come in, you know, I would get bagels and coffee. We're from Long Island, so that's what we do. Bagels and coffee and blah, blah, blah. And we just like, all right, you know, like we're, you know, showing up at the construction site. What are we building today, boys? I don't know. Is it great? Is it not great? Who cares? Let's get in there and, you know, and that's how we did it. Like I said, there was only two songs that existed before that writing period. But I think like when you just let go And let go and let God. No, I'm not going to say that. But when you let go and you just, you know, see what happens, you know, the possibilities are there. But, you know, we would also kind of have a look, you know, a reference track or two. Oh, pull that up. You know, have you ever heard this song? You ever heard this track from the 80s? What about the, you know, so we would kind of do stuff like that. But I don't know, Jimmy, am I getting that right or am I misremembering anything?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel you on that. It felt, I mean, I guess I would only add that it sometimes those situations are unproductive and feel lazy and just go into jammy territory. But I really think it speaks to who was sitting in the room writing this stuff, that it was like, yeah, we're showing up unprepared in the sense that we didn't write anything to bring to the table, but we're going to do the actual work of like, oh, let's hone in on a part, a hook, and then go from there, which is my favorite kind of songwriting. It's like intentional. I mean, yeah, you catch some really cool human stuff jamming and maybe you bring that somewhere into a song, but some of that intentional, like, let's seek out until we find like, oh, there's a song seed here and now we're going to attack that. It felt intentional, you know, each step of the way. So I love that stuff. Brings order to some of this.
So you talked a little bit about you like the intentional nature of how you kind of made this album. I'm curious if that is specifically for like the intent was to make a hook or the intent was to kind of build a specific thing, or if it leans even maybe more into the intent of like the theme of the song or what we're trying to say with this song.
I think I figure that out later, like lyrically, unless something really compels me right away. One song actually, Running From My Grave, that lyric came boom, just hollering at me. I was like, just immediate. Also Agita was like that too. So sometimes that happens. Sometimes I'll decide what I want to say or what I want a song to be about later. But yeah, as far as hooks are concerned, I mean, we're trying to knock you over the head with hooks. There's no question, at least I am. So, you know, that's definitely part of it. Cause at the end of the day, we're writing songs, you know, we're like, to Jimmy's point, we're not a jam band, despite what our previous booking agent thought. I mean, melody is extremely important to me. You know, the Beach Boys are one of my favorite groups. I grew up on Frankie Valli, things like that. So yeah.
So then the process for you guys is more music first, words later.
That's what it was for a lot of this record. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So when it came to writing this album, you talked a little bit about some sonic inspirations of listen to the song, listen to the sound, listen to this hook. What were some of those artists that you were listening to that maybe inspired you a little bit for this album and the music that you were writing?
There's two I can think of. I definitely remember sitting down and pulling up a Super Furry Animals song one morning while we were having our coffee and bagels. And I'm trying to remember which song it is right now. I think it's Night Vision off of the album Gorilla. And it has kind of just like a punky beat. You know, we had maybe been, Mike had maybe have said something like, let's find something with a little like up-tempo, maybe a little punky. I threw this tune on and it's kind of during the verses, it's less of a singy melody and more of kind of like talky. I wouldn't put it into rap territory. It's just kind of like barking. And then I would say that that day we set up a drum beat that was about that tempo, kind of punky, and we wrote Straightened Out, which has a song called Straightened Out, and the verses are like kind of spitting words at you. And then we hit a, you know, hook in the chorus. So I remember that song coming up, and I know that it wasn't totally conscious, but I was really jamming on Cyndi Lauper's She's So Unusual. I mean, that whole record, a lot of the writing sessions, and I think that must have found its way into at least the feel of Running From My Grave. Yeah, intentional or not, it's all kind of just mixed up in there.
You're not going to mention Huey Lewis in the news?
I feel like I've pushed too much. I want to give these guys more of a scoop. I've talked enough about Huey, but you know what? Huey Lewis in the news. Actually, I'll switch it to this. Ready? Billy Joel. We called him out in the court. We needed to come up with a bridge for Too Proud to Be Happy. And I remember at least saying that word once, so I'm repeating it here out loud for listeners to know that.
I don't remember that at all. What did Billy Joel have to do with that song?
You were like, oh, that the Billy Joel bridge. You don't remember? No. Well, we came up with saxes.
I mean, I'm fine with it. Oh, okay. Because yeah,
the chord changes really. No one really calls out Billy Joel for his chord changes in particular. But we're Long Islanders here.
Yeah, he's the Pope around here. So,
yeah.
Pope of Long Island.
He deserved it. Joel.
He really does.
Yeah.
He really does.
If anyone. What about you two, John, Michael? Anything in particular that you guys were listening to or feeling when you were making this album?
For me, it was Phil Collins. And I guess the Strokes album, The New Abnormal, like came out around the time. And it was just, that was sort of like an eclectic, not like a far departure from Is This It? So like in that sense of stretching the genre boundaries. But yeah, Phil Collins was a huge influence for me my entire life. And I tried to do my best Phil Collins impression on this record.
He shaved his head and everything.
Yeah. I got all sweat.
The commitment.
That was important.
I cheated on my wife. No, I didn't.
Oh my God.
No, you cut that part.
All right, maybe not that committed. Maybe not
she
that.
Won't listen to this. It's
you
all
did
right.
Watch a guy drown.
Did Phil Collins watch
I
a guy drown?
I didn't save a guy from drowning.
Is that what it was?
What about you, Mike? What do you got?
I mean, I remember there was a track from this artist called Slow Tie that I was referencing for some of the heavier stuff. But I don't know. I can't remember anything, you know, outside of the ordinary, which is, I mean, I do listen to like the contemporary indie bands that were, you know, that are in the zeitgeist of the space that we're in, like the Paramores and the 1975s of the world. But I also love my hip hop. I love doo-wop. So yeah. I mean, I think that's all kind of sprinkled in there somehow, some way. Particularly with the hip hop stuff, like the method. I was making beats for a long time. When we say beats, it's the production of a song that is not the lyrics. So the way that you do that is a lot of layering, and it's a lot of trial and error, and it's a lot of try this bass line, or what about this beat, or what about this, you know, keyboard part. So if that's making music in the studio on the fly. So that production style leads itself to, you know, a lot of great creative moments, because you don't have to be bogged down by, you know, I'm one person with a guitar and I have to write an entire song right now. It's no, loop up a part, see if there's a melody, try this, try that. So I think from the production side of it, that's definitely influential in how we were working. And how I think, you know, I'll personally probably continue to work, just because I really like that. I mean, I still will sit with a guitar and try something on my own, but I do love that collaborative nature.
Yeah, writing in the studio is like, feels like the new normal. For someone that's been songwriting forever and in studios forever, things have changed and they're not going back, I feel like, in certain ways. Demoing used to be, like you said, okay, everyone play that again the same way, except let's try this one other thing. And you spend, you know, months in the garage with your boys doing that or whatever. And now it does feel, and then you would bring that to the studio because we can only be in here this one day and it's perfect and it's all ground down. And now it's, you know, everybody has a recording set up in their laptop, so we can demo in a different way. I pushed against some of that a little bit, I feel like, during the change of everything, but it's like, no, it's part of songwriting now. Things go fast. And yeah, I love making this record.
that way.
Yeah, I feel like you can definitely hear a lot of just that in general in this album, like between the kind of almost 80s vibe that you kind of get and like the kind of indie pop, indie rock. Like there is a lot that this album feels like it embodies. So I think there's a very good, again, like diverse sound to this album that is still very, very consistent in what it is. And you guys got to play an album release show. So tell us a little bit about that and kind of how you, I guess, transferred this sound into a live setting.
Well, initially, you know, the band kind of ballooned to, you know, 9 pieces at one point in time, just because a lot of the new stuff and even to an extent, the old stuff is very, you know, multi-layered and everything like that. And that turned out to not really be sustainable. So we pared the band down to right now we're operating as a 5-piece. What's the question? Why did I just start talking about that?
The album release show.
And yeah, bringing it all to the stage live.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if we're giving anything away here, but we did start implementing some sampled tracks, which again is, you know, also tied into hip hop, of course. And so that, you know, allows us the freedom to, you know, add to our sound. And I'm saying that like it's a dirty thing, like 99% of people do that now anyway, which is something that frankly was pretty fascinating, because we were working with a sound engineer who was gonna accompany us on this tour that we were supposed to go on, and he was like, you guys aren't using tracks? No, we never did. You know, we'd have a sampler that Johnny would trigger and physically hit something and play it, but we never played with tracks. So, you know, I hope these guys aren't mad at me that I just said that, but I don't think so. But it was a
perfect choice for us to be a live rock band on stage instead of a full, like, Dave Matthews Band vibe on stage and still keep all those elements going. Yeah.
There's just more room for Jimmy to dance. That's basically what I said.
Yeah, there was a whole horn section in my way before. I'm like, excuse me.
This is my stage. But the release show was great.
Love the release. Actually, the night before the release show, we were in Philly, and we had such a great time. I hadn't played Ort Liebs before. It seems kind of like a back bar room bar situation. Seemed to be booked, like a local scene was really happening there, and people showed up, and they knew the record. And we're like, hey, this came out today, and they were singing along. So we had such a good time in Philly, and we'll be back for sure. And then, yeah, we got to do the sort of hometown show in New York the following night. We had to wake up and get home to New York. Time for the show. But, yeah, it ruled. We had such a good time. And I was so surprised by that. Again, by night 2 of the record being out, people were singing along and saying that they'd already heard it a bunch. And I was like, whoa, you know, you put so much into this. And I've learned to sort of detach from what happens after that. But it's such a nice surprise when suddenly you're like, oh, hell yeah, this is connecting. All right, great. So we had a very warm welcome in Philly and New York for our release shows.
The release show was packed, too, which was like such a relief because, you know, when you're putting your own bill together and, you know, it's this big thing, it's always like, you know, a bad dream that you're going to show up and like no one's going to be there. But we had a very, very receptive and solid crowd that came out. And obviously that felt really nice and definitely a night that we'll remember for a long time.
That sounds like, honestly, what a lovely way to start with this album and get it out there and be able to play to packed rooms. Do you have any plans currently to play any more shows? Like, is there anything in the works that you're looking forward to in regards to that? And obviously this is a new album and it's pretty recent, but is there any other music that you're currently working on as well?
It's funny because literally today someone emailed us about another Philly show, so that'll be something that we have to discuss. We're in the process of changing booking agencies. We were with an agent, a couple agents at this one agency that it didn't work out. We had a tour that ended up getting scrapped. So right now we're kind of dealing with that, but I'm sure at a certain point we will definitely have some more tour dates. As far as like spot dates and things like that, I'm sure those will trickle in as well. And I mean, in terms of new music, what I can say is, we put out our first record in 2020. We put out a remix project that ended up going, bananas for us in 2022. And then we just put out a new record. So we've been very active, but that's not going to change anytime soon. As a matter of fact, we're definitely going to keep our foot on the gas pedal in that regard. So, it won't be too long before you're hearing from us again, I'm sure.
And I want to say this here because it's public and it'll push it into reality a little more, but I'm always a fan of Gamblers doing Halloween and or Christmas stuff. And we've done it. So I'm saying now, look for something then, and now Mike has to deliver.
I mean, it's April.
I'm committing someone else to this job right here. I'll
show up.
We have a cool little tradition with Halloween. During the time actually when we were first starting to get the band back together and work on the new music, it was right before Jimmy came into the fold. We did a couple of Halloween covers. We did a cover of Monster Mash and we did a cover of Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary was, true to form, but Monster Mash we completely recreated. It sounds like an Amy Winehouse song, honestly. Then like the next year we made a music video for Pet Sematary, and then the year after that it got like Sirius XM started playing it, so and then WFUV started playing it, so it's like it kind of like we have a nice little Halloween tradition, so maybe we'll do something like that again. We love Halloween in Gamblers.
He's committed, we're doing it. You heard it here
first.
That's like two separate things now that have been said in the past like 2 minutes, so it feels we can confidently say something. Sure.
You know what I forgot too? We filmed a live concert in a theater on Long Island it was the night before Halloween during COVID. Still no live audiences. So we rented out this really nice theater in Patchogue. It's called Play for the Ghost Light, and it's on our YouTube channel, and it's kind of like the first ever live show with the new lineup.
That place was haunted, but so we played to an empty house, but all the ghosts booed.
All right. It's been nice talking to you guys.
I think it's like my service, my signal is.
Oh, man. No, honestly, I think that's like a really cool thing to have almost a tradition of Halloween or Halloween adjacent to just kind of do something. You don't have to have a plan necessarily, but that's a cool thing to definitely keep in mind and for others to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's a tradition for sure.
Yeah.
Again, excited to see whatever comes next for Gamblers. If anyone has not, go listen to the album. It is very fun, very good. Sid, do you have any other questions
So Gamblers? Where can we find and follow you guys online and listen to all of your music?
Spotify is probably our biggest audience. Our YouTube channel is, I think, Gamblers Music. All our social medias, I'm 1,000 years old, at Gamblers Baby, except Facebook is /gamblers because we're difficult. The record's also out on vinyl and in record stores, and you could also order it through our website, gamblersmusic.com. We had a nice run of pre-orders and people enjoying the vinyl. It's always fun. We got like some like unboxing videos of people, and that's super cool. It's like people don't even realize. I put this online the other day. Like, someone just left a comment. Someone did an unboxing video and filmed it and put it on their own Instagram of unboxing our album. And then someone else made a comment like, oh, I love this song. I just added it to my playlist. And I just said, like, you guys have no idea how much that means. You know what I mean? Like, those small gestures, like, it takes 2 seconds. Not the unboxing, that was more involved, but like some, just a comment like that, you know, just when you, we're never going to be too big to, for that to not feel awesome. Just like every time we hear ourselves on the radio, it's like, what, like, did someone make a mistake? Like, it's not, you know, it, we never will take that for granted. So thank you so much to everyone who has been supporting the record so far. And I think vinyl, this is audio, so no one's going to see this, but you guys will see it. I always have one at the ready just in case. Jimmy did a fantastic job designing the vinyl, so definitely grab one if you can. But yeah, appreciate you asking.
Yeah, thank you. And if you do reach out on social media, make sure you use hashtag Jimmy Nation to let them know that I'm the winner and the best one of the gamblers. I think that's what we're doing with Jimmy Nation these days. So, all right, we'll see you on the web.
Well, once again, gamblers, thank you all so much for being on with us tonight. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure's all ours. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Alex and Sid. This has been
thank
fun.
You for listening to Little Known Tracks. If you or a loved one want to be featured, send us an email at littleknowntrackspodcast@gmail.com. Also, feel free to follow us over on Twitter and Instagram at LKTPod for more information about the podcast, when episodes come out, and occasionally giveaways and things of that nature. Thank you again for listening. See you next week. We'll be right back.